And we're up to Daf Kuf Ches Omid Al. So let's just summarize some of the points we made last week, especially since Brian, you weren't here last week.
Can I get you a drink?
If you don't mind, get me just hot water, and then I'll be able to. Okay, thanks.
From the yummy to the yummy.
So we had a long discussion about fasting, so to speak, on Erev Pesach, on the 14th of Nisan. And we came to the conclusion that it's Samach Lemincha Ketana, not Samach Lemincha Gdola. And it's all about eating matzah in the proper state after you've cut down your achila on Erev Pesach. Then we started the sugya of Haseba. And so far what we know about Haseba are the following 3 points. Number one, matzah needs Haseba, but maror does not need Haseba. That was point number one. Point number two is that yayin needs Haseba. Not only matzah, but also yayin. And point number three is that only 2 out of the 4 kosos require Haseba. Which of the two, we don't know. The Gemara vacillates back and forth, and therefore the Maskana, the Gemara paskins, that we need Haseba on all 4 kosos. And the Ran is very famous for saying that here we suspend the normal principle of Safek Drabbana Lekula, because were we to apply Safek Drabbana Lekula, then we get to the first 2 kosos, we're going to say, well, maybe I'm not chayv and Haseba on the first 2 kosos, I'm only chayv and Haseba on the second set of 2 kosos. When we get to the second set of 2 kosos, I'm going to say, well, it's a something to Rabbanan, maybe I was only chayv in the first 2 kosos. And at the end, tis batel mitzvah Haseba. The whole mitzvah Haseba is going to be completely null and void. So therefore, we don't apply the principle of Safek Drabbanan Lekula. So that's all as far as last week is concerned. For tonight, we start with the word prakdon, and we'll close the door if we can. And both doors have to be slammed, because these doors don't close unless you slam them. And you'll see on the left side of Daf Kuf Ches Amud Aleph a tosis towards the bottom that says prakdon. And I'm just using that as a sign. You drop 2 lines below that, and the last line in that word in that line is prakdon. Okay, we have a machlokas here between the Rashbam and all other Rishonim about what the word prakdon means. The Rashbam learns that a prakdon is someone who lays back on his back with his face towards the air, if you follow what I mean. So he's laying flat on the ground and he's looking up towards the sky. He's a prakdon. Other Rishonim say no. A prakdon is, on the contrary, somebody who's lying on his belly and his face is towards the ground. Again, I'm not exactly sure how such a person gets the wine into his throat in that case. But at least according to Rashbam, he can theoretically get, you know, drink the wine while he's laying down flat on his back. But the Rashbam says that in such a case, lo shmei aseba, he's not yotze the mitzvah seba she'ein zed derech cherus. This is not what we call a demonstration of freedom, because it's very uncomfortable to drink. You'll all admit this when you're lying on your back. In fact, we're going to soon see that it's even dangerous to do such a thing. And therefore, the Gemara continues by saying, Hasebas Yamin Lav Shmei Haseba. If you're leaning, you're reclining on your right side, that's not considered Haseba. Why? Because a person usually has to eat with his right hand. So if he lies down on his right hand, how is he going to be able to free up his hand to feed himself? He's got to feed himself with his right hand, assuming he's a righty. And if he's leaning on his right hand, then he won't be able... So he comes along and he says, you know what? I'm going to lean on my right side and I'll figure out a way of feeding myself. He'll get himself a long spoon. You know, like the story about the man who gets after Me'ev Yesrim, he gets a tour of Gehenna. And he notices that people are sitting around with great food, but everyone looks emaciated. And he gets to Gan Eden and he sees everyone sitting with the same food and they look fine and happy. He says, "What's the difference?" So the angel explains to him that in Gan Eden, what they did was they took long spoons and they fed each other. But in Ganem, they weren't willing to do that. No one was willing to feed each other. So that's what I'm saying here. He may say, "Look, I'll figure out a way of eating even though I'm reclining on my right side." But the Gemara now says, "Lo od ella shemayaktim kana leveshet." Right? You have the esophagus and the windpipe. The air has to go in through the windpipe. And when he bends, when he reclines on his right side, it opens up the windpipe. Chazal understood that there's a certain kova that's chaf vav ayin. Chaf vav ayin. What did I leave out here? Kaf vav vet ayin. Okay, now I got it. And that covers over the windpipe. And when you start leaning on the right side and drinking, that opens up the windpipe. You don't want to open up the windpipe. You want to keep the windpipe closed, because otherwise food is going to get stuck in the windpipe, which is called the kana, and you're going to suffocate. So therefore the Gemara says, lo od, even if he wants to opt for a reclining on his right side and say, "Well, you know, I'll figure out a way of feeding myself with a long spoon," shemayaktim kana leveshet. He may, in effect, by leaning on his right side, open up this covering over the windpipe. The food will get into the windpipe. V'yavo lidei sakana, and he will be endangering his life. So basically, we can classify hasebas yamin as an incomplete or invalid haseba for two different reasons. One is, which only applies to a righty, because he is going to interfere with his ability to feed himself, and that's not called derech cherus. That's not comfortable at all. But the second reason, which applies to both a righty and a lefty, is that his kana is located, situated in a way that now he might endanger his life. And there are two halachas here. Number one, you're not allowed to endanger your life. That's called Ushmaya Tamiyotis Nafshel Seichem. And number two, it's not considered derech cherus when you do it in a way that would endanger your life. So where do we do a seva? On the left side, correct? I'm not making a bracha because I made a bracha before. Don't be chayshim miksherim here.
I was worried.
Okay. Now we get to the good stuff. Who's obligated in Haseba? We're going to have many different issues here. We're going to have an issue about a woman who's married, a woman who's not married, a woman who's married but she's not at all afraid of her husband. We're going to have a case of a son who is at his father's Seder table. We're going to have a case of a Talmud who's at his Rebbe's Seder table. We're going to have a case of someone who's a son and a Talmud because his father is both his biological father and his spiritual father. And then we're going to have the case of a Shamash. He's not sitting down at all. Has he going to be Yotze the Mitzvah Seva? All these issues are going to come up now here on Daf Kuf Ches Amud Aleph.
What about a lefty? Is that going to come up?
Lefty is chayev in Haseba. There's no ptur being a lefty. We, even though we think lefties are weird, just kidding. But of course, the lefties think the righties are weird, and you have to read Dr. Seuss with the peanut butter on this side and that side. You don't.
They also, or we discussed if they also go on the right side, or the left side.
As far as I know,
kind of elevation.
Yeah, as far as I know, it's on the right side as well. I mean, on the left side as well.
Because kind of elevation, it's
right. Because of the kind of elevation. Okay. Isha etzel baila lo boy haseba. Okay. Now here we have two different issues in the Rishon, two different controversies about how to read this Gemara and how to interpret it. It's unbelievable. One line in Gemara and it breaks open two different machlokas. Number one, the Rashbam doesn't have the girsa of Eitzel Baila. And therefore, the way the Rashbam has the text of our Gemara, not the way we have it, it's Isha Lo Boy Haseba. And this leads to the great controversy regarding a single woman who's not married, or a married woman who's not in the presence of her husband. And one school of thought would have it that in such a case, she's obligated in the mitzvah of Heseba, because they have the girsa of Eitzel Baila, which means that when do we suspend the mitzvah of Heseba in the case of an Isha? That's only in A, a married woman, and B, in the presence of her husband. And this is predicated on the principle, which we'll get back to in a minute, called Emas Baila Oleha. Okay, we have to see what those words mean. Literally, the fear of her husband is upon her. The other school of thought, taking out the Eitzel bylaw, is of the opinion that a woman in general, whether she's married or single, whether she's in the presence of her husband or not, is exempt from Heseba. And this leads to the famous Shita, which we rely on in certain occasions, of the Shiltos. The Shiltos was one of the Gaonim of Achai Gaon, and he writes, Isha ein darka lahasev klal. I don't know if it's tzius, I don't know what it is, but a woman doesn't do a seba in general, whether she's married or not married, whether her husband is there or not. We don't paskin like the Shiltos, but you should know that we consider the Shiltos as a very important factor lahalokha. So again, to summarize the first major battle here amongst the Rishonim, we don't know whether the Gemara here is based on the fact that Isha ain darka lahasev klal, or it's based on Emas baila oleha when she's a married woman in the presence of her husband. Now, what is this whole business about Emas baila oleha? And people who take this Gemara literally will tell you that a woman has to tremble in the presence of her husband. I've never seen that in practical terms. I wasn't zochet to see that. Maybe you guys do. I don't know. In any event, that's not what it means.
The other way around. Yes.
Yeah, the other way around, that you've seen. You know, I'm the boss in the family and my wife gives me permission to say so. Right? And basically what Emas Baila means is the following. There's something called a shibut. Are we familiar with that phrase? I'll just write it on the board just in case. They bought me a new blackboard, so I have to justify it. Okay. It's called a shibut. Okay? Now, I'll give you an idea what a shibut means. In the context of a ksuba, which is the agreement of the husband and the wife and their mutual commitments, he makes certain commitments to her and she makes other commitments to him. Her commitment is to serve her husband, which means that she has a shibut to her husband. And therefore, it becomes a little bit like she still has a shibut, right? The whole idea of Derech Cheres is that I am no longer Mishubad, right? Mishubad Mayinu Lefar Mitzrayim. I now freed myself from that shibut, that bondage. She still has a halachic shibut that's incumbent upon her shoulders, and therefore, in the presence of her husband, when that shibud is activated, you know, if her husband's not around, that shibud is not activated. It's latent or potential, but it's not actual. She cannot do heseba. Well, that's going to lead me to the second machlokes, which I'll get to in just a minute, and that's called isha kfufa labayla. Now, I just want to mention here that this concept of Isha Labaila is relevant to the laws of Kibud Av V'Em. The Gemara has in Masechet Kiddushin a case where your father asks you to bring him a cup of water, and your mother asks you to bring you a cup of water. Who do you give first? Again, you have to be mechabit both of them. But in what sequence? Does anybody remember the Gemara?
Father first was the wife.
Oh. Is that always the case, Aaron? Mm-hmm. It's only the case if they're married. If they're not married, let's say they're divorced, then the mother is on the same equal level as the father, and then we have to find other rules that set a priority. Maybe ain over mala mitzvahs, you know, if she's closer to him, or whatever it might be, other technical rules. But if they're married, then he, the son, has a certain chiyuv of kavod and ema vis-a-vis his father, but and he has the same chiyuv vis-a-vis his mother of kavod and yira of ema. But since his mother has a chiyuv or a shibud vis-a-vis his father, then he and his mother both share that same obligation and special commitment to him, and therefore he gets first dibs. So we see that this halacha of Isha Mishubedes Labayla is very relevant. In fact, the Gemara says that once a woman gets married, it's very difficult for her to be Mekayim, the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, to serve her parents, because what takes precedence is her chiyuv now within the contractual marriage agreement to be Mechabed her husband. So this halacha is written in Shulchan Aruch.
The person has the comment?
Yeah. But only if it's to the point, because I got a lot to cover today.
Yeah, I'm saying on the point. It seems surprising to me that Haseba would be a sign of disrespect in some way. In other words, it's Derek Cheres.
Cheres means absolute Cheres.
Well, not really. It means,
yeah, how do I know it's absolute? Yeah. Because even though she left Mitzrayim, and we're going to soon have a whole sugya about that on Kufches of the days, and she's obligated in all the mitzvahs that are incumbent upon someone who left Mitzrayim, so she left this situation of Avdus L'Cheres, but she still, to some extent, has a shibud.
I hear you, but that's the...
So it's got to be an absolute Cheres.
That's the Chiddush,
that's the Chiddush.
In other words, you would think that if I'm celebrating leaving Mitzrayim and drinking the wine, Derek Cheres is a way of celebrating my...
But not a Seba.
What?
But then, I
was about to say, and with Haseba, that's a celebration of the Mitzrayim.
No.
How does that relate to what's happening right now at the table? You're going to say, well, that's a sign that you're not respecting your husband appropriately.
Ah, oh, I see what you're asking. Why is this mafkia my shibud? Why does this insult my shibud when I'm only doing it for the sake of the mitzvah of... Yeah, thanking Hashem. The answer is that I have to be in a psychological state of total freedom. Then I can do Haseba. Haseba is something that requires a complete freedom. Okay, let's go on, only because we have a lot to do tonight. And now I want to mention the second controversy. If you read the Gemara carefully, it says Lo Boy Haseba. Now, if we go with the Shiltos, we can read it thusly. Since a woman does not usually do Haseba, the Chachamim did not obligate her in Haseba. But it doesn't say anywhere in the Gemara that she can't do Haseba on her own initiative as a voluntary mitzvah. However, the Rashbam and other Rishonim were of the opinion that because of Baila, the presence of her husband, she cannot demonstrate Cherus. Then the Gemara is only saying that since Lo Boy Haseba, she doesn't have the mitzvah of Haseba, meaning Chazal didn't require her to demonstrate Haseba, because as we said before, she doesn't have total Cherus, therefore she's not allowed to do Haseba. Because her Haseba, if it's a voluntary action, is in a sense pogant, undermining her Kfifus, her Shibud L'Bayla. So again, let's just summarize two major controversies. Number one, is this Gemara addressing all Nashim or only Isha Bifnei Baila? Number two, is this Gemara exempting a woman from Haseba? She has no responsibility and obligation, but she can do it voluntarily. Or is the Gemara saying that since she's not obligated, therefore she's not allowed to do Haseba? Then the Gemara says, V'im Isha Chashuvahi Tzricha Haseba. What is an Isha Chashuva, literally a woman of significance? So the Rishonim refer you to a sugya in Masechta Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that a Jewish woman is not allowed to be alone with a non-Jewish man. And the Gemara makes the following exception. If she's an Isha Chashuva, she's allowed. Why? What difference does it make whether she's an Isha Chashuva or not? If we're afraid that, you know, something could go on over here between the man who's not Jewish and the Jewish woman in the privacy of a locked room, what difference does it make if she's an Isha Chashuva? Oh. So the Rishonim explained the following. What's unique about Yichud, about being alone, the violation of that Isha with a guy that doesn't apply with a Jew, is that we're afraid of a rape situation. In the case of Yichud with a Jew, we're afraid of what's called pitui, that the Yitzhahara might get the best of them, and that's called seduction, but not rape. With a guy, there's a chashash rape. What removes the chashash of ones? Isha chashuva. Why? Because the definition of an isha chashuva is a woman who has stature within the society. Let's call it, help me out here, I would call it politically, but that's not exactly the word I need. No, I need to say in terms of our ability to take someone to court. I don't know what English word.
Litigiously,
if there's such a word. Okay, so she's an isha chashuva because she can show up in a non-Jewish court and sue for rape in this case, and her arguments and her claims will be weighed seriously by the court. So she has to have a certain significance. And the poskim say that such an isha chashuva who has a stature in society also that chashivus expressed itself in terms of her relationship with her husband, although she does have a shibud, but it's not the same shibud as a woman who doesn't have that status. And now the poskim write that bizman hazeh, every woman in our society is considered an isha chashuva. So basically, our ladies have to do a seva. Number one, even if you take the most extreme view that a woman doesn't have the obligation of a seva because a seva is not appropriate for a woman, that's only in a general case of a woman. But in the case of an isha chashuva, if we subsume all of our noshim today as noshim chashuvos, as the post can do, then a woman has to do has seva.
What happens to shibud and kafirta?
The shibud goes down in the case of an isha chashuva, because since she has political status and stature within society, even the shibud in marriage goes down a level. For that, we'd have to learn Masechta Ksuvos. They're also an isha chashuva. Is an important concept. Let's move on to the next case. Ben Eitzel Aviv. What would you guess, Rav Osai? I would have guessed Eino Masev. Gemara says no. Boy has seva. Meaning, there's something called Yira, but not Shibud. And if it's not a Shibud, there's no legal, you know, legally binding slave relationship or service relationship incumbent upon the son, then there's a seva. But here, we have a chiddush of all the Rishonim against the Rashbam. They say that the reason why Ben Eitzel Aviv by a seva is because of Mechila. It's not that a Ben has less of a Shibud and less of a kfifus and mora to his father than a woman has to her husband. He has the same identical, maybe even more. But in the case of the relationship between a father and a son, there's an automatic assumption of mechila. Av shemachal kvodo, kvodo machal. In the case of a husband and a wife then, the Rishonim say if her husband, again, it's not relevant to us because anyway all our women are Nashim Chashuvas, but even back in the Gemara's time, if the husband would be Mochel, then, again, depending upon the two days that we discussed before, according to one opinion at least, she would be obligated in Hesseba. Ibailahu. Now the Gemara vacillates back and forth. What do we do with the case of a Talmud, Eitzel Rabo Mai? Now, if we're going to analyze this question from this perspective of Mora, and we're not going to apply the principle of Mechila, then the Mora that a student has to have for his Rebbe exceeds that of a son to his father. This is a Mishnah in Masechta Bav Metzia that says that if you have a Chiyuv to your father and a Chiyuv to your Rebbe both at the same time, then which takes precedence? The Rebbe, because Aviv mevi'o l'chai olam hazeh, v'rabo mevi'o l'chai olam haba. But if we take the second perspective, that even in the case of Beno, the mitzvah of Mora would be enough to neutralize and void Haseba, but we assume that the father is Mochel, then the Gemara has an entirely different kind of suffix. The Gemara is wondering whether the Rebbe, can we assume the Rebbe is Mochel? And what I'm going to try to claim is that's a machlokas right here in the next piece of Gemara. Toshma. Amar Abai, Abai tells us the following story. Now you have to know that the Rosh Yeshiva for many, many years, I think it's 20 years or more, was Rabba. And only when Rabba died, Rav Yosef took over as the chief. So Abai is going to tell you a story in which he was personally present at a Seder of Rabba during Rabba's lifetime. And also, because Abai was much younger, at a Seder of Rav Yosef after Rabba passed away. And Abai tells us to find, Ki avinu be mar, mar is Rabba, is then, Abirche da hadadi, we did Heseba by leaning one on the other. I want to get back to this in a minute. Okay then, but the main point now for our purposes is that yes, Rabba approved of Heseba, even though the Talmidim had the obligation of Yira, of Mora to the Rebbe. But Ki Aisina Lebe Rav Yosef, when Rabba passed away and Rav Yosef took over to the helms, he became the Rosh Yeshiva. Omar Lon, he told us on the Seder night, Lo Tzri Chaso, forget about Heseba, there's no need to do Heseba. In other words, that you're not chayev in the midst of a Seba, because a Talmud in the presence of his Rebbe doesn't have the obligation of a Seba. And again, the Rashbam says if he doesn't have the obligation of a Seba, then he's also to do a Seba. And what is the principle that underlies Rav Yosef's psak? Mora Rabcha Kimora Shamayim. The fear and the intense trembling that you have in front of your Rebbe is on the same level as the fear that you have to God. It's really amazing, because when you talk about Mora Shamayim, you talk about a personality. I'm sorry, I'll get to the personality in just a minute. When you talk about Mora Shamayim, what you're talking about is the presence of the Shekhinah. If you're in the presence of the Shekhinah, you are absolutely trembling. That's why you find many times in Tanakh that even when the Jews go off to Derech, HaKadosh Baruch Hu just shows up. And with the Gilui Shekhinah, he brings the Jews back to the straight path. He doesn't even have to castigate them. The same thing applies to a Rebbe. When a person is in the presence of his Rebbe is such an intense personality in terms of Mora Shamayim, in terms of his religious connection to God, that it's almost like he's standing in front of the Shekhinah itself. And that has tremendous impact on him. So the trembling in front of Shamayim, in front of Shekhinah, is paralleled by the trembling in front of his Rebbe. So now we see a machlokes between Rabba, the old school, and Rav Yosef in the new school. Mm-hmm. Whereas Rabba allowed Heseba, Rav Yosef did not. Mm-hmm. And it would seem that Rabba allowed Heseba because he felt that the problem with Heseba is that the youngster is, you know, the student is in a state of trembling. He's not really demonstrating absolute chayrus. So Rabbi said, well, I'll be mochel, my kavod and my yira, and therefore you can do Heseba. Rav Yosef, on the other hand, held that no, this is not an issue of mechila, of the Rebbe being mochel on his ema and his kavod. This is an issue of what state of being or state of mind experientially does the student have to be in the presence of his Rebbe. And therefore Rav Yosef said, we can never obligate you in the presence of your Rebbe to be in that state of mind that makes a Seba an appropriate demonstration of absolute freedom. There is no absolute freedom in the presence of your Rebbe. And therefore Mechila itself wouldn't help. That's one way of learning it. The other way of learning it is that the machlokus between Rabbi and Rav Yosef was whether or not the Rebbe should be mochel. Rabbi felt that why shouldn't the Rebbe be mochel on his aim of the Yira in order to facilitate the Kiyum HaSeiv on behalf of his disciples. But Rav Yosef said, no, we have to train our students. Mora Rabcha Kimora Shamayim. In my time, I knew a Rosh Yeshiva. I did not study by him. That when you walked out of his presence, you have to walk out backwards. And if you, heaven forbid, walked out frontwards, he would call you back. This is a true story. That's Mora Rabcha Kimora Shamayim, and if you don't know about it, then ask the Rebbe himself. He'll tell you. And that was Rabbi Yossi's personality. Rab, on the other hand, felt that no, there's no stira to Mora Rabcha K'mor Shemayim and experiencing Derech Eretz, like Aaron was saying before. I'm not trying to undermine my Mora to the Rebbe, I'm just trying to fulfill my mitzvah of thanking Hashem for Eretz. Now notice that Abai tells the following story. When we were at the Seder of Rabbah, we did a Seba. How did we do a Seba? We leaned on each other. So this touches on a major issue in Haseba. The poskim are wondering about this. What is Haseba? Let me ask you a question. Here's my left side, and here's my cup of wine. Would this be Haseba? Oh, so the poskim say no. That's not Haseba. Get yourself an armchair. Get yourself a friend who's sitting to your left, and lean on something. Do you follow? Why were the Talmidim leaning one on the other? It says in the Rashbam they were leaning on the Birkayim, on the knees. In other words, I put my elbow on my again, I don't know what the last guy in the line, I don't know what he did exactly. Don't ask me that question.
It's a circle.
Yeah, maybe they were sitting in a circle. But you have to lean on something. As Seva means leaning on something. And I noticed at my own Seder table that people are not makpid on this. And they just sort of lean, you know what I mean? And there are no arms on the chairs. You know, the best thing for a Seder is to get your armchairs. But if you don't have armchairs...
There's no room for...
Right.
There's no what?
Never room for armchairs.
Everyone can have an armchair.
Yeah, but I mean, somebody sitting next to you, no? Just lean on his knees. Alright. I'm just telling you, you should know that this sugya is very important, Lallah. Meisvei, the Gemara asks a kash on Rav Yosef. We have a brisa that says, "Imakol adam meisiv." In the presence of anybody, a person does a seva. Vafilu Talmud Eitzel Rabo. How could Rav Yosef say that the Talmud is part from Haseva? The brisa says explicitly that even a Talmud is chayv in Haseva in the presence of his Rebbe. So Rav Yosef answers, "Ki Tanya Ahi." That Bryce is referring not to a Rebbe, in the technical sense, someone who taught you Torah, but a different kind of a Rebbe. You also have to respect the Rebbe, who's Shulya Denagri. In those days, you should have, you know, if you wanted to become a carpenter, you would apprentice. Now they're advertising on the radio, you know, if you want to learn how to be a locksmith, you know, they have a new program where you get a license if you complete the course and you're a locksmith. So if you ever get stuck and you can't get into your house, you have someone who'll break in for you. And the person who teaches you is the master, right? And the Shuli Denagri is the Talmud who learns by his master. Now his whole umnus and his profession was gleaned from this teacher of his. And the Gemara says in many places that you owe a tremendous debt of gratitude to someone who taught you an umnus. Mm-hmm. He's giving you chiyus. He's giving you the ability to live. And you have a certain level of kavod. But the Gemara says that you don't have yira. You don't have that extra element of fearing him and being in awe of him. And therefore you're chayv in a seva. But if it was your Rebbe... Now what does it mean he's your Rebbe? So the Gemara in many places says a Rebbe Mufak is someone who taught you Rov Chachmaso. And I never understood what Rov Chachmaso means. It's hard for me to believe that when you take a look at your career in learning, you can point to one Rebbe who taught you most of what you know. I mean, there is such a thing. But back in the day, you know, you sat at your Rebbe's feet for 40 years, okay. But today... So I heard once from my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik that he thinks that maybe... Rov Chachmaso doesn't mean in quantitative terms. You know, how many black Gemara did you learn from your Rebbe? You know, let's say you covered 1,000 black in your life, and of all the different Rebbeim, one of you taught you the most Gemara. No, that's not what it means. It means that Rebbe who gave you the building blocks and he gave you the skills, what we call the Derech HaLimud, so that you could analyze the sugya and understand it. He's called your Rebbe Mufak. Iboilu Shamash Mai. What about the case of a shamash? He doesn't have a contractual agreement which is called a shibud, but on the other hand, he is actually being hired to serve at the table. In fact, all of his service he does in a standing position. So would you obligate the Shamash at some point to take a break and sit down and do a Seba Toshma Yom Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, a Shamash Ochel Kezayis Matzah, when he's ready to eat his Kezayis, Kshu Mesiv Yotzeh, if he sits down and he inclines, then he's Yotzeh. Mesiv in, lo Mesiv lo. Shmamino deboya Seba. When is he Yotzeh the mitzvah of Matzah? When he sat down and he reclined. If he didn't do so, then he's not Yotzi Shmamino. We see the Shamash is also obligated in a Seba. And the poskim say we see a Gevaldige Chiddush here from this Sugya, that Heseba is Ma'akev in the mitzvah itself. Because the Gemara wants to know, based on this Brisa, whether or not he can be Yotze the mitzvah of Matzah without a Seba. And the Gemara says no. Since he's obligated in a Seba, he's not Yotze without a Seba. Which means that if a person ate the Matzah without a Seba, he's going to have to eat it a second time, because he wasn't Yotze with the first time. And that breaks open a whole Sugya of whether or not a mitzvah derabbanan can be Oker, can undermine and void a mitzvah d'oraisa. Now, Rabosai, we get to a different issue. Forget about a Seba. Now we're talking about the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos. Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, Noshim Chayovos B'Arba Kosos Halolu. Even though Dalet Kosos is a mitzvah Saseh Shazman Groma, nevertheless, in this case, women are obligated. Now we turn to Kuf Ches Amid Beis. And why are women obligated? What generates the exception to the rule? Sha'af hein hoyu bi'oso anes. And here we have a gigantic machlokes between the Rashbam and Tosfos. The Rashbam, in order to explain women's obligation in Dalet Kosos, he invokes a sugya in Sota, and then a parallel sugya in Masechta Megillah and in Masechta Shabbos. There are three cases where the Rabbanon instituted a chiyuv mitzvah and they imposed that chiyuv on women, despite the fact that these are all mitzvahs aseh shazman grom, the time-bound mitzvahs. The first is our discussion about Dalet Kosos. The second is the mitzvah Megillah. The third is the mitzvah Chanukah. And in all three cases, the Gemara says that the reason why these time-bound mitzvahs were imposed upon a woman is because of Afhein Hoy Bosanes. Says the Rashbam, what does Afhein Hoy Bosanes mean? That the miracle itself came through the women. The women were the ones who brought about the miracle. The Gemara in Sota says that how did we merit the redemption from Egypt? Bishar Noshim Sidkoni Yoshoi Bioso Ador Nigalu. And the Gemara in Masechta Megillah says that Esther was the one who was responsible single-handedly for the miracle of Purim. And in the case of Chanukah, we had Yehudis and all the women who played part in that role. Says Tosfos, he doesn't understand. This is four lines down from the top. Af, he says the following, V'kosha, how could it be that Af Hein Hoyu Bosanes means that because of them, the miracle came about? Af, Mashma she'eino ikar. Even the women are obligated. The main obligation is incumbent upon the men. According to the Rashbam, the word af is inappropriate here. And furthermore, the Yushalmi has a slightly different formulation of this principle, and it says af hein hoyu bioso asofek. What does that mean, bioso asofek? It means bioso sakana. For example, in the case of Purim, the women were also included, lahashmid, laharug, liabed, etc., etc. And in the case of Sheba Mitzrayim, they were incarcerated in Egypt. And in the case of Chanukah, they were under the tremendous pressure of the Yevanim. So in all cases, women suffered the peril and the and the danger of that particular period of time, of that exile, and therefore they too were spared and saved from that peril, and therefore they required to express their gratitude to Hashem in the case of Megillah, read the Megillah, in the case of Chanukah, light the Chanukah candles, in the case of Dalet Kosos, to drink the four cups of wine. And women are obligated. It would seem that according to Rashbam, not only are women obligated, but they were responsible for establishing these mitzvahs. They brought about the miracle, which is the backdrop to these mitzvahs. So we have two approaches to the words af hein hoyu bosanes. Now Tosfos asks the kasha on himself. this kasha would not be difficult on the Rashban. For Hadi Amrinin de Peturos mi Sukkah. The Gemara says explicitly in Masechta Rosh Hashanah and elsewhere that women are exempt from Sukkah. The Afa Gavta Afain Hoy Biosad Nes, Kiba Sukkah so Shafti is Bnei Yisrael. The Sukkahs were meaningful not just for the men folk, but also for the lady folk. Now, according to the Rashbam, it would not be fair to say that the Nes of the Sukkahs was brought about by women. We don't know that women necessarily played that major role as they did in the other holidays, in the other Nisim, in the holiday of Sukkahs. But according to Tosus Lishitaso, that they were included in the same Safek, in the same Sakana, where women went out to the harsh wilderness no less than men. And now Tosus comes up with an unbelievable Chiddush. Hasam, over there in the case of Sukkah, we're talking about an essay Do'oraisa. When it comes to mitzvah say Do'oraisa, we're not going to say Afein Hayu Bosan Nes and obligate them. But in the cases that we're dealing with, namely Dalet Kosos, Megillah, and Chanukah, what's common to all these three, they're all Takonos Rabbana, is when the Rabbana make the Takana, they include women in the obligation because of Afein Hayu Bosan Nes. Now, the problem with this Tosfos logically, which again would require a whole discussion, not for now, is that who cares if Sukkah is Doraisa? The Rabbanon were the ones who obligated the Noshim in the case of Ab. So I'll grant you that in the case of Sukkah, perhaps the Rabbanon don't have the authority, the power to make it into a Chiv Doraisa to include women. That's Afein Hayu Bosan Nes as far as the Rabbanon. But at least on the Rabbanon level, why shouldn't the Rabbanon obligate the women in Sukkah? Okay. Om Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel Arba Kos Halol Tzarch Yehebaim Kidei Mezigas Kos Yofa. Now there are two parts to what Shmuel is saying over here. One is Mezigas Kos and the other is Yofa. The word Yofa here is a reference to a sugya in Masechta Brachos which addresses the laws of a Koshal Bracha. A Koshal Bracha has many different halachos that require Yofa. There's some sort of a beauty or a significance or an upgraded respect that we have to have for a kosher bracha. But what is kidei mezigos kos? What does that mean? So the Rashbam says that the word meziga does not mean to pour, but rather it means to mix. And in the old days they had what was called yayin bilti mazug, which is like concentrated wine. And then that concentrated wine was too harsh to drink. They would dilute it with what? With mayim. What was the ratio, says the Rashbam, of kidei mezigas kos? It's for every part of yayin, they would add three parts of mayim. So the ratio was 1 to 4. So every kos mazug of yayin was made up of 1/4, 1 part yayin, and 3/4 yayin, mayim. And not only that, the Rashbam says that in addition, what you have to have is the same kos as a kos shel birkas hamazon. And that relates not just to the ratio between the yayin and the mayim, but also to the size or the volume of liquid in the kos. And that's called a rova revius halug yayin. It's 1/4 of a lug. Okay, I think in our times it's 4.4 ounces, if I'm not mistaken, but don't quote me on that. So now we have the special dinim of Dalet Kosos. We're going to talk about whether or not grape juice is okay. We're going to talk about what happens if he drank the undiluted wine. What happens if he diluted the wine with more water than 3 parts to 1. We're going to talk about what happens if he drank all 4 kosos one after the other. Shalom al Seder Agada. All this is going to come up now in the Sugya Shasan Chai. If he went ahead and he drank the concentrated wine without diluting it, so he did not achieve what Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel called Meziga Sakos. Meziga meaning to mix it, dilute it. Yatsa. Okay, we don't know what four, this means. Yes.
4 cups? Four
yeah,
cups
well,
of undiluted wine or
well, I don't think it makes a difference, but let's say it was all 4 cups. So he drank 4 cups of undiluted wine. The man is probably dead drunk by now. And his stomach has probably hurt him until Shavuos. I don't know. But so far what it says is that he was Yotze. Alright, we have to qualify that as we go along in the sugya. It can't be that he's Yotze. This is not Derech Heres. Then the Gemara says, Shesan b'vasachas, he pours four cups of wine, mazuk, and he drinks them continuously, one after the other. He does not recite neither the Haggadah, nor eat the Suda, nor does he recite Hallel, nothing. He just takes four cups of wine, puts them on the table, and drinks them one after the other. Yotza? He fulfills his mitzvah. We're going to have to qualify that. It can't be that he fulfills his mitzvah. Each kos has its own respective bracha. Yeah. Then we have Hishka Mehen Lebonav Ulebrei Beso Yotza. This also makes no sense. He took the wine and he gave it to his household members. He didn't drink it himself. How could he be Yotze? So now the Gemara analyzes this. Shesan Chai Yotze. What does it mean that if he drank it undiluted, he's Yotze Amar Rava? Yedei Yayin Yotze. Yedei Cherus Lo Yotze. So I'm going to give you the Brisker Rav's twist on this. Truth is, it's published in the Brisker Rav, but it was actually a joint effort between two brothers. That's Rav Velvel and his older brother Rav Moshe. And they came to the conclusion that there are two dimensions to the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos. This may very well be the most important thing I can tell you since we started learning. One dimension of Dalet Kosos is called Shtias Kos Shel Bracha. I'll explain what that means in a minute. The other dimension is Derech Cherus. It means the following. On the one hand, there are four cups. Each one requires a bracha. And each kos has to qualify as a kosher bracha. On the other hand, that's not enough. It's not enough just to have four kosos shel bracha. You need that each kos have an expression and a fulfillment of Cherus. What converts and transforms the kos into a kos shel cherus? It's going to be, number one, the fact that it is mazug, meaning it's areva, all of shtios areva. And number two, it's going to mean that he fulfills a mitzvah of sfiras, yitzias mitzrayim, sipri yitzias mitzrayim on that kos. So now let's go through the cases of the Gemara. See if I can plug you in on this. Shesan Chai, he recited the Haggadah as he should. Each kos got its own bracha, but the only problem is it was not Yayin Mazuk. So the Gemara says Yidei Yayin Yotza, Yidei Cheres Lo Yotza. He fulfills his chiyuv of Shtias Dalet Kosos because each kos was a kosher bracha, and each one was drunk al seder. So he has the chiyuv of Amiras Bracha ala kos. Each one has its own, respectively, its own bracha. And that's what he did. And even a kos shel yayin without meziga can qualify as a kos shel bracha. But in the case of Dalet Kosos, in addition to the mitzvah, the obligation of Dalet Kosos shel bracha, we have another obligation, and that is Derech Cherus. And Derech Cherus requires that he drink Shtia Areva, meaning a pleasant kind of wine, which in this case means Yayin Mazuk, and here he drank Yayin Chai. So when we said earlier that if he drinks it Chai, he's Yotze, that's not really that has to be qualified. He's Yotze one dimension of the mitzvah, namely what? Kosher Bracha, but he's not Yotze the other dimension of Yidei Cherus. Now we flip it around the other way. Shesan Bevasachas, we said that if he drinks them continuously, one after the other, Yotza. What does it mean? Rav Omar, Yidei Yayin Yotza, Yidei Arva Kosos Lo Yotza. What does this mean? Yidei Yayin as a mitzvah of Cherus. That's how the Rambam has it. He's Yotze. Why? Because he drank four wonderful cups of wine, Yayin Mazuk. But there's a mitzvah of Dalet Kosos in which each kos has its own unique bracha. And the kos is defined by that bracha. The kiyum is not to just drink a kosher yayin stam, you take a cup and you fill it up with wine and you call it a kosher cherus. Yeah, that's cherus. But you're not yotzi the kosher bracha, because each one of the dalet kosher has its own unique bracha. And when he drinks them one after the other, shalom al seder agada, he has not recited the four brachos that define the nature of each bracha as a separate kiyum of bracha. Hishka mehan lebana v'lebnei sayotza. How could he possibly be fulfilling his mitzvah if he didn't drink the wine? Very magnanimous of him to share it with his bnei bayis. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Yitzchak, v'hu, you have to qualify this statement. The ishti ruva the kasa. He drank most of the kas. And whatever was left in the kas, the minority part of the kas, instead of drinking himself, he shared it with his bnei bayis. Now what's the chiddush over here? If he drank rov kos, then for sure he's yotzei. So some say that the chiddush of the Gemara is that he doesn't have to drink the entire kos. And that means that if Chazal defined or established the kos as a kos shel cherus, maybe, perhaps, you would think that he has to drink the entire kos. Kamashpul, no, all he has to drink is rov kos. And the Ramban comes to a radical conclusion here based on this Gemara. Normally in a kosher bracha, as we said earlier, you only have to drink a revius haluk. Let's call it 4.4 ounces. It's probably a lot less than that, by the way. Anyway, but in the case of Dalet Kosos, the Ramban says you have to drink rov kos. Why? Because we have a principle called rubo kikulo. When you drink rov kos, it's as if you drank the whole kos. And since there's a mitzvah of cherus, that requires you to drink the whole kos. So as far as kosher bracha is concerned, all you have to drink is revius haluk. But if you want to be mekayim in the mitzvah of cherus, you have to drink the whole kos. Says the Ramban, you don't have to drink the entire kos, but you have to drink rov kos. Other poskim disagree with the Ramban, and this is very relevant on the Leil HaSeder. Many of us, and especially our wives, will find it too difficult to drink four cups of wine. Some of them will just take a sip of the cup and then fill it up again when you're not looking. And the truth is that if you want to be yotzi the mitzvah according to the Ramban, you're going to have to drink at least rov kos. Other poskim want you to drink the entire kos. And even if you want to be mekil, like those poskim who say you don't need rov kos, you need at least a revius. And some of the ladies, and I've seen it amongst men as well, they'll just take a zip of the wine. And that's why I always say, Rabbosai, we have to be very careful on the night of the Seder not to overeat. It's the most challenging part of the Seder. Not the Sipur Yetzias Yisrael, that's relatively easy. But not to fill up your belly, because when you get to the last kos, you're mamish about, I don't want to say the word to regurgitate, I don't want to say that word. But you're so sick that it's kos al mizono, and that's called an achila gasa, and you're not yotzi the fourth kos. So somehow we have to curtail our eating on this night when our wives are serving the best food, and especially you're not makbid on gebrachs. And by the time you get to the fourth kos, you know, you're like a balloon. You know, you're ready to fly in the air. Because after you ate all the matzah and all the marah and the karach, and then you eat a whole suda plus four kozos, it's like, how much can the belly take? You know what I'm saying?
Do you have to enjoy the four cups?
Enjoy the food.
So that's interesting. The Rashbam, take a look at the Rashbam if you could find it very quickly. Yedei Yayin Yotza. It's let's see, how do I indicate where to find it? You see Tosus Dibra Maschil Echad Chodesh, and then there's a Tosus below that Ruba. So if you take a look straight across, right in the middle, sandwiched between those two, you'll see a Rashbam that says Yedei Yayin Yotza.
Yeah.
So I told you that Yedei Yayin Yotza means that he was Yotze Cherus. The Rashbam adds another dimension, another element to the equation, Mishum Simchas Yontif. That the Yayin is a kiyum of Simchas Yontif. So you ask me, do you have to enjoy it? The answer is yes. The Rashbam says yes, because it's got to be Simchas Yontif. You can't be repulsed by the Yayin and called Simchas Yontif. Not only that, I'll tell you even more than that. But this I shouldn't say out loud, because a lot of people use grape juice on the night of the Seder. According to Rashbam, I don't think that's possible, because Simchas Yontif means you have to drink something that's meshaker, that has some sort of intoxicating ability. Now, some people get high on anything, so let them drink grape juice. What do I care? Meisvei the Gemara Sakasha. We have two more minutes. Arba kosos halalu tzarich sheyehba and kidei revius. We need a minimum of revius on in each one of these kosos. Correct. Echad chai v'echad mazuk. In other words, if he's going to drink yayin chai, which again he's going to forfeit the mitzvah of cheres, but at least he'll get the mitzvah of koshel bracha. But now he's going to have to drink a revius of yayin chai. I wish him well. The echad mazuk, and if it is 1 to 3, 1 yayin to 3 water, then once again he's going to have to drink at least a kos that holds a revius. He may have to drink only a rov revius, but he has to drink. He has to have a cup that has a revius in it. Echad chadash, the echad yashan. Now there are two types of wine. There's old wine, which is supposed to be very good wine. That's the ma'ula wine. And then there's new wine that comes straight from the gat. That's inferior wine. But that too is sufficient for the mitzvah of dalet kosos. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, tzarech shehebo tam, umara yayin. Now there's tam and there's mara. Now, in the case of Mare, that we can understand with the Gemara of Rabbi Yehuda, who quotes a pasuk that says, "Al tere yain ki yis adam." In other words, yain has to be red, so that we really want to drink red wine on the night of the Seder. That's called Mare. And then we have something called Tam. Tam seems to be, according to Rashbam at least, that it has this intoxicating element. And then the Gemara says, "Ketani mias kedei revius." We need a shear of a kos shel yain of revius. The At Am B'Shmuel said before that all you need is kos yofa, and the Gemara thinks that kos yofa is a different kind of shear. It's less than revius. And the Gemara says, "Amri idi v'idi chad shiurahu." Whether you call it a kos yofa or you call it a revius, it's all the same. So Rabbo say, here's where we're going to stop. And if you could help me remember, maybe I'll make a little note here, that we're up to Tanu Rabbanan. Let's see where it is here. How many lines is it up from the bottom of the page?
Four.
Tanu Rabbanan. Okay then. And we've already established that women are obligated in the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos. And now the Gemara is going to address the question as to whether children, young children, are obligated in the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos. And if they are we giving them intoxicated wine? We're going to get into deep trouble here. They'll lock us up for that. And why are children chayiv? They're not chayiv in any mitzvah. Why is the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos the exception to the rule? Now, we're up to almost kuf tes. Don't feel badly because it doesn't seem like we're going to get to the finish line before Pesach, because the perek ends on Daf Kuf Chof Aleph, if I'm not mistaken. But the good news is that we really only have to get to Kuf Yud Aleph. Why? Because from Kuf Yud Aleph and on is Agadita. And not only is it Agadita, but it's an Agadita that has very little, if anything, to do with Leil HaSeder.
From Kuf Yud Aleph to Kuf
Chof. There are a few exceptions. For example, there's a sugya on Kuf Tes Zayin that we'll have to see about the difference between Halal and Shira on Leil HaPesach and so forth. But most of it all is Agadat. I love Agadat. And this is one of my favorite Agadatas at the end of Masechta Pesachim. But if we don't get that in before Pesach, it's not connected to Pesach. So we can do it after Pesach. All right then?
It was for the Leil HaSeder.
About the red wine.
Yes.
Alsatian Jews.
Can we just open the door now so we'll hear Baruch Hu in case.
Alsatian Jews have the meaning to take white wine on Leil HaSeder. So.
Do me a favor.
The goy can't say that it's blood of
The libels, yeah. Now, yeah. If you can, again, if it's not a tircha, write me an email because I really want to remind myself to discuss this issue about white wine. Could you remember azariaburzon@gmail.com?
Yeah.
Okay, then write me an email and just one line and just remind you you want to talk about white wine and the Leil HaSeder. Okay?
A-Z-A-R-Y-A.
B-E-R-Z-O-N, N like in Nathan.
A-Z-A-R-Y-A.
B-E-R.
Z-O-N,
like in Nathan, @gmail.com. Okay, then send me a one-liner. I want to talk to you about white.